This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, the Dean of all things STEM and STEAM, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show my podcast partner, Galactic Space Geek, Jeff Gagne.
Hello, Jennifer, and hello, listeners. Today we have an exciting episode because we are talking about something that everybody is starting to learn about. It's not just for the super nerds anymore.
That's absolutely correct. What problem are we solving today?
How will AI affect learning to code?
Ooh, how will AI, artificial intelligence, affect learning to code? This is a really great question and one I think a lot of people are starting to think about. Who is our guest today, Jeff?
Agreed, Jennifer. Our guest today is just the person to be talking to. Today we have Peter Cooperman. He is founder and CEO of Hatch Coding.
Welcome to the show, Peter.
Hi, everybody. I feel like now I need to keep my energy level up to match.
Oh, yes. We are a very energetic show. This is going to be lots of fun. So, Peter, we're going to talk today about something that lots of people, including myself, are curious about: AI and coding and all of this cool stuff. So I have to ask, when you were a kid, did you always love computing and want to be doing stuff with computers?
I happen to be one of the minority of people that kind of knew, but I have an interesting story, which is actually on my website as well.
Yeah.
So I got interested in computers because I had a problem to solve. And for any 10-year-olds that are out there listening, if you have a problem that really needs to be solved, it's an itch that you just have to scratch, that's when you'd be like, hey, maybe I can use a computer and coding to solve it. For me, I was really, really nerdy. I love Dungeons and Dragons. I just love Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes.
But I hated rolling all those dice. I was just like, I have to roll these dice over and over and over and over and over and over. And it's just so annoying. This is my 10-year-old brain was thinking. I'm sure that there are 10-year-olds out there who have their own annoying thing that they're like, yeah, that's just totally annoying. And I had just been gifted a computer. I was 12, not 10, but I'd just been gifted a computer. And I was like, okay, let me try and use this computer to solve this problem that I really want to be solved.
Awesome.
And I built a custom app that allowed me to roll my Dungeons and Dragons dice for me.
Wow.
Wow.
And when that happened, this light bulb went off. I was like, oh, I use my computer to do this one thing. But I can see how I'm just like moving puzzle pieces around, and I could have like done something else with it, right? And then 2 years later, I had an opportunity to do something else, and 5 years later, something else. But the spark, right, was when I had a problem that I need to solve, and I just really want to solve it. And I took a path that's much different from most people, what's called an autodidact, which means that I can like pick up a book and just read it from cover to cover, and I'm okay with that. And the vast majority of people are not like that, right? The vast majority of people, they need to be in a classroom. They need to have friends around. When they go to the library to study, it's with friends, right? They call people to do their homework.
Yes.
I just love doing it myself, totally different than most people. And so I basically learned that way, but that isn't like the normal way to learn. But it all happened because I had a problem that I really need to solve.
I love that. I think that's fantastic.
Agreed. So if that was your first problem, before we get too close to where you are now, what was one of your next problems after rolling your D&D dice?
That was really interesting. So I found a website called The Motley Fool, which is a personal finance website.
I know that. Yes.
Yeah. And they had a message board around, and this is also very nerdy, they had a message board around quantitative investing. So basically... Yeah, like basically every time I tell you a story.
How old were you when you found this website?
Like 19.
Oh, right? Okay. So, all right.
There's
a
gap,
a little
I guess.
Older, but
yeah,
still.
There's a gap between 12 and 19.
Still, That's fairly young to be looking at the Motley Fool, I think.
Yes, yes.
And quantitative investing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think between 12 and 19, mostly I just wanted to play video games.
And yeah.
Right, let's be honest. And I think that like most of the coding that I did during that time was, can I replicate this video game using code? And okay. You know, I didn't do it too often because it's much more fun to play than it is to code. But on occasion, I was like, I think I can make this better. And so I'm going to code it and see if I can just add my own little tweak to it. Right. And I think it really boils down again to the same thing of like, what problems do you really need to solve? The next problem that I really need to solve was, I just wanted to build this basically automated system for picking stocks. And basically, if you take a look at stocks that you really love, right? Let's say you love Roblox and you love Nike.
Right.
I don't know, right? Yeah. Like you just love Nike shoes and you love Roblox. Now, both of those are companies that you could buy shares in. That you could actually own a piece of that company over the next 10 years just by buying a share, right? If you're 10 years old, go ask your parents how to do that. They may or may not allow you to do that. But like when you buy that company, what you're doing is you're basically making an investment that you think that company is going to do really well over the next 10 years.
Right.
So which company is going to do better over the next 10 years, Nike or Roblox, right? Like who knows?
Right, yeah.
But wouldn't it be interesting to take a look at how much money they're making and how many employees they have and how much product they're selling? And instead of sort of trying to figure it out, saying, okay, well, this number is higher than that number, so therefore I'm going to buy this company instead of that company. That you take yourself completely out of it.
Wow. Yeah.
And you just be like, I'm going to let the numbers speak. And whatever the numbers say, that's what I'm going to go with.
That's amazing. Did it work?
Yes. Yeah, so I ended up spending years and years and years doing this. and
so I think it worked.
It worked and it was really fun. That was probably the first big problem that I solved with code in my young adult life.
Nice.
But the interesting thing is like you can use code to build Roblox, right? Roblox is actually just a bunch of code. You can use code to build like Facebook or Instagram, which is a completely different type of app. And you can use code to build this quantitative, which stock is better based on the numbers app. And it's all the same code. It's just the puzzle pieces put together in different ways.
I love that.
I think that's just so interesting because like if you really love dogs,
right?
You could build an app that helps dogs or dog owners in some ways. And it's the same pieces of puzzles that have built Roblox or Facebook or a finance app or, right?
Like right.
Literally there are, let's say 1,000 pieces in this code puzzle, right? Different commands you can use. And then you just organize them in different ways. And with those 1,000 pieces, you can build anything you want. And I think that is just the coolest thing.
It is.
Because anything that you imagine in your head, if you have the time to want to go build, like if you're, and this is really boring, but if you're having problems with math and you want to just get better at math and you love code, right? You can use code to build your own custom system to deliver math problems to you in the exact way that you want to.
Wow.
And you need to, right? Like, which, you know, if a 12-year-old is in middle school and they really want to do that, they can actually do that. Or their schedule is getting really busy and they want to organize their schedule. They could build their own app to help them organize the schedule exactly the way they want it organized.
That's right? Incredible.
Yeah.
So assume that you're someone like me who knows nothing about code. Like, are there certain types of coding that you recommend people go start with for their first steps? Or kind of like, how does this work? Like, if I wanted to code, I have no idea where I would start.
Right. I think the best way of starting is first have a problem that you really want to solve. You may not solve it tomorrow, but at least you're like, you know, like when I had this problem that I needed to solve, the dungeon, the dice rolling thing, I did not know how to build that. I didn't know a single line of code. I just know that I had this computer in a box, right, with a ribbon on it. And I had some sense that I probably could use it, right, somehow to do something. And then I had this problem that I really wanted to solve. And now all of a sudden I was like, okay, I really want to open up a book because I have this big why that I really want to solve, right? So on the internet, there are like 10,000 places that you can go to learn how to code that are for free, right? You can go to YouTube, you can go to Free Code Camp. These are all Khan Academy free resources. They cost nothing.
Okay.
And if you just want to dive into it, you can learn a lot of code from. But probably, especially if you're a kid, like 10 or 12 years old, you're distracted by a bunch of things and you're going to go play hockey or baseball with your friends, or, you know, you're going to play a board game or read a book or do homework or whatever. You're only going to go back to that if you have a really big why. Once you have that why,
sense.
Like,
yeah.
Okay, now I'll spend the time to do it, right? Like, now I have a big reward that's really meaningful to me. And so now I'm willing to go to these free resources or somewhere else and be like, okay, I really want to learn. How do I learn? And the three of the biggest coding languages to use are HTML, JavaScript, and Python. Right.
Okay.
And there are hundreds, but like those are almost like the big three. HTML is how you make something look on the screen. So the formatting, what color is it? How big is it? How big are the fonts? Right. Is it organized to the left or to the right? Where are the divisions?
Right.
Think of it as HTML allows you to put rectangles on the screen and decide what's going to go into those rectangles, text or images or animations.
Right? Okay. That's helpful.
It won't actually build the stuff inside the animation. So it's almost like you're setting dinner and you're deciding what size plates you want and where those plates are. It's not the meal itself.
It. Love that analogy. Yeah.
It's just literally where the plates are on the dinner table.
Okay.
The JavaScript is the middle piece, which is the food that's set in front of you when you're at the table and what you do with that food, right? So you're going to pick up your fork, your spoon, your knife. You're going to put it in your mouth. You're going to organize. Right. Like all of that stuff is the JavaScript. It's the interaction piece. So when you're on a website and you're interacting with the website, the thing that's driving that interaction is the JavaScript.
Okay.
How that interaction got there, that hasn't been talked about yet. But the fact the food is there and how you interact with it is JavaScript.
Okay.
The Python is what happens in the kitchen, right? We call it the back end. It is the hidden part of code, basically. You know, so if let's say you have a store like Amazon, and Amazon has all these items that you can buy, books and CDs and toys and whatever.
All of
them have prices and sizes and weights, right? Like, you don't actually see all that on the website, right? There's a whole bunch of organization that happens in the back end, kind of behind the scenes. That's the Python. So if you think of Python as the kitchen, the JavaScript as the eating of the food, and the HTML as laying out the dinner table, basically setting the table. Right.
This that's is like a, awesome.
I like this.
This is this makes it so easy for those of us who don't really know a whole lot about code. This is great.
Fantastic. And then once you get into it, there's, you know, then you can get super complicated because there's a version of JavaScript called node.js. JS is the JavaScript, which actually acts as the kitchen. So you can have JavaScript in the kitchen and JavaScript at the table. Because you know, people found JavaScript useful and they built a library for JavaScript. And basically, think of a library for JavaScript as all the different dishes that can arrive at the dinner table, right?
Wow.
So, like, if you're having dessert, you would use dessert.js, which is the which is the JavaScript library which presents dessert. You don't have to call dessert.js until the end of the meal. Right? Unless you're doing a reverse dinner, which is totally fun as well.
Right? Oh my gosh.
Like, imagine you had, you know, breakfast.js and lunch.js and vegetarian.js and meat.js, right? And then you also have like vanilla.js, which is just your standard like beginning system.
Yeah.
And so what happens in code is you have this core piece of programming language, but then a bunch of people said, oh, we want JavaScript to do this or we want JavaScript to do that, right? So there's a visual interpretation of JavaScript called processing.js or p5.js.
Okay.
And that basically, normal JavaScript, it takes 11 lines of code to build a column, right? You just have to ask the computer to take the ones and zeros and turn it into color.
Okay.
And what p5.js does is, listen, we should actually have like a library, right? A short code where you can just say, background as a command, and that should create a background color. So you shouldn't need 11 lines of code just to create a background color, because that's something that's really useful, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Right?
So totally. A visual yeah. interpretation of JavaScript will basically allow you to do graphs and animations and basically anything that involves visuals, you can use p5.js for, right? And so there's all these different libraries, and this exists in Python as well, right? There's math.py, there's data science libraries, there's AI and machine learning libraries. And I think we started this episode with a question about AI. And we're
that's,
like, way
yeah, that's where we're going to get to next.
But this is the segue back to the original question is JavaScript and Python all have libraries that help you implement artificial intelligent algorithms by the same thing, by just having like little shortcuts so that you can use artificial intelligence.
I've never heard it explained this well. Wow.
Yes. And this is I know you just mentioned that we kind of went off a little bit from the main question, but having this understandable background on what code is and what people are using it for, not just, it's an app or, it's a website or, it's Amazon, but actually understanding those pieces, I think is really going to help us understand now getting into the question of, so before we get to the question, can you give us your definition of what do you consider AI? What does
question.
That mean?
Yeah.
That's a really good question. So artificial intelligence, right, is any type of series of decisions or instructions which mimic a decision-making system.
Okay.
Right? Okay.
So, you know, if you take a game like tic-tac-toe.
Okay.
Right? You can create a set of decisions, and this would be not very smart AI, which just says this, you know, when you're playing tic-tac-toe, start in the top left and go over row by row until you find a blank square and then put your symbol in that square.
Okay.
And that is artificial intelligence, right? Once you code those instructions, anybody who runs those instructions would come up with the exact same result, right?
Right.
You start on the top left, you go over, you keep going until there's a blank, and then you just put your X or your O down depending on who you are.
Right.
And that's a form of intelligence, right? You could say it's less than average IQ for tic-tac-toe to just, you know, right? It's not the best way of playing tic-tac-toe.
No.
Right? But it is artificial intelligence. It's an artificial way of making decisions, right?
Okay.
Meanwhile, you can have another version, which is, okay, first of all, is the first turn your turn or is it the opponent's turn? If it's your turn, then put your symbol in the middle. Right,
that's
the
first thing.
Okay. Right.
More intelligent way of playing tic-tac-toe, but it's the same system, which is a set of decisions that you're getting the computer to make in a specific way. And we can go from those two steps, right, which just involve tic-tac-toe, to more complicated steps. Like, let's say you're playing chess, right? And now you can assign point values or strength values to different moves. And you can ask your computer, make every possible combination of the next three moves, and then assign a strength value to each of those, and then pick the one which is the strongest strength. It's exactly like our tic-tac-toe artificial intelligence system, right? Which just said, find the first blank square. But now we're just making it a little bit more complicated. And that is still pretty dumb artificial intelligence for chess, right? Like, that's not going to win a lot of chess games.
Right.
But you can start to see as you start to layer on more and more rules about how the computer should make decisions, you're artificially making the intelligence smarter and smarter, right? And so what you end up with in chess, right, is they will literally go out millions of moves out, right? One, two, three, four, six moves. They'll start to assign different relative strengths, right? If this set of moves puts more of my pieces in the center, right? Because in the center of a chessboard, you control more.
Exactly.
Then score that higher. If it moves more of my pieces to the side, then score it lower, right?
Wow.
If this set of moves allows my kings to be checked, right? Then score it lower.
Yes.
If it puts more pieces around my king, make it higher. And I'm totally simplifying it because
but it makes sense, understandable.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, so now you've set up whole AI. So here's the question. How will AI affect coding in the, you know, learning to code? Because are all of these things, I know we have ChatGPT, maybe that's where you need to start with, but like how can I code and use AI? Is that what you're we're talking about here? Or
yeah. So I'll give you an example of how this could impact code. Like when we write sentences, we start every sentence with a capital letter.
Yes.
And we end every sentence with a period.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So you could take a bunch of text and send it to AI and say, please find every capital letter and just put a period before it. If a period doesn't exist. Right?
Okay.
Basically, grammar check your text for, and you know, very quickly, obviously, you're going to point out the problem of this, which is if there's a name in your text.
Or an acronym or something.
Right. But at a very basic level, I think that we can understand that if we send something to AI and we give it a set of rules, right, please correct this, then the AI can immediately improve it as long as the rules make sense and they work the majority of the time. Right.
That's
so
right.
In JavaScript, the equivalent of a period in English is a semicolon. Most, but not all, statements or instructions in JavaScript have a semicolon at the end. So if you send a bunch of code to AI and you say, this is JavaScript, please correct the semicolons, right? They can like go through and say, okay, any line that doesn't have a semicolon in it at the end, we're going to consider putting a semicolon in. And then we're going to have exceptions. If you're building this type of code structure that doesn't, then we won't. But for the most part, we're going to put semicolons where they need to, and we're going to take out semicolons where they don't need to be. And now your code can be, the technical term for it is linting. I don't even know what that means, but it's basically like taking the lint out of the dryer, I think, for code.
Okay.
But basically, you can correct basic errors really simple with AI, really simply.
Instead of having to go line by line by line and figuring out why this doesn't work, that sounds very helpful.
Anybody who's listening who's ever coded has gone to the point where the code doesn't work and they don't know why.
It's
really frustrating. And anybody who's ever coded, especially at the beginning, the first 10 or 20 hours that you're learning how to code, when they find the solution to their first problem, it's usually something like they just forgot the semicolon over here.
A
bracket over there, right?
Yeah.
And what AI can do is anytime that you have brackets, right? Let's say in English, you always have an opening bracket and a closing bracket. The same
Correct.
Is true in code as well.
Okay.
Make sure that all the brackets are paired.
Ah,
and if you have some code where the brackets are not paired, then either tell the user that there's a missing bracket.
Right.
Or if your AI is good, just put the bracket in yourself because you probably know where it goes, right? If you're doing a certain type of structure within code, you probably know that the bracket goes here because a lot of other structures look the same way.
Oh, wow. So that's helpful then. That probably saves you many, many, many hours of, oh, dear God, help me figure out which thing I left out. Right.
I mean, what's really amazing is so ChatGPT came out a year ago. And a year before that, something came out to help programmers called Copilot, which is basically another artificial intelligence thing that did the same thing, just not in ChatGPT. It did it in an app called VS Code, which is what a lot of professionals and adults use to code in. It's just an app on your computer like Microsoft Word or the internet browser just for code. And so for about 2 years, programmers, professional software engineers have had these AI tools available to them. And literally over 50% of people who get paid to code use some form of AI because fixing these problems without having to think about them is just really, really useful. If you're missing a semicolon and you're a professional software engineer, you have already in your life typed out 10,000 semicolons, right? Because this is your job.
Oh my gosh.
Right?
Sure.
But if you're missing it today, it's much easier and faster to just have artificial intelligence solve it for you than to spend the 5 minutes to look for where you missed it, right?
Wow.
And before artificial intelligence, you spend that 5 minutes because you're getting paid and this is what you do. But now you can, like, if for whatever reason you missed that semicolon or that bracket or that indent or some little piece, that's a minor issue, right? It's like, I forgot to put, I was writing out my name, Jeffrey or Jennifer, and I forgot the J, to capitalize the J.
Right.
Right? Like, sure, okay. You can go back and you can look for it and say, oh yeah, that J in my name is not capitalized, now I need to change it. But if AI could just fix it for you, it's like super easy.
Works for me.
So more than more than 50% of professional software engineers use this type of AI every day now.
Wow.
Which is amazing. And that's part of what artificial intelligence can do. The other part, which I think is really interesting, is you can basically use ChatGPT to generate ideas for you. And the ideas may not be the best ideas, right? So you could say,
right,
ChatGPT, I am 10 years old. I love Mario Brothers and I love robots and I watch Loud House.
Okay.
Halloween is coming up. Can you please list 10 possible Halloween costumes for me, given these are my interests, right?
And okay. I love that. Yeah.
And the costumes that ChatGPT comes up with may not be the best costumes, but at least there's a starting point from which to say, yeah, those 9 really suck and I would never use those. And this last one, I wouldn't use either, but it made me think of something else. And now I can, now I got a good Halloween costume. And, you know, I'll give an assist to ChatGPT because it started my brainstorming process.
Yeah.
And this is really, really useful. There's this term called writer's block. And I don't know if most of your audience has had that or not. But it's basically when you're staring at a blank sheet of paper and you're supposed to write something, right? Maybe it's a paragraph about what I did during my summer vacation. Maybe it's an essay on World War II. Maybe it's a discussion about, like, racism, right? Maybe it's something about the state you live in or the city you live in, right? Maybe it's something about science. And you're just supposed to write 2 paragraphs about something for your teacher, or 1 paragraph. And you're just staring at that sheet of paper and you just don't know what to write. Well, you can use ChatGPT and just say, hey, I'm 10 years old. I'm supposed to write 2 paragraphs about the countries that were part of World War II.
Right.
Let's say that's it, right? Or I'm supposed to write 2 paragraphs about racism in my city of Baltimore or whatever it is, right?
Right.
But I'm 10 years old. Can you please give me 3 ideas on what I could write about and put them at a level that a 10-year-old could understand,
right?
And the answers that you're going to get back are not going to be very good because ChatGPT is not really, really brilliant at coming up with awesome things that you can use right now. Like, you can't take those ideas and just hand them off to your teacher and be done.
No.
That will never work.
No.
That will never work.
No.
But you could use that to start your process of saying, oh, okay, here's a starting point. And now I don't have writer's block anymore because I at least have something on the page that I could work with. I can discard it because it sucks, or I can accept it, or I can modify it. And that's, like, really, really useful. And so one of the ways that AI is really going to help with coding is, first of all, fixing those small errors.
Right.
And eventually, hopefully, fixing medium-sized errors, but also generating ideas for, like, you know, I will need to build a video game where my character can go up and down using my arrows. Can you please give me the starting code for that? Right. And the starting code that it gives you might be totally wrong, or might be a little bit right. It might totally suck. It might be a little bit right. You might accept it, but at least it's a starting point. And I think that's, you know, like, a really interesting thing to do. At our company, we have a Solve with AI button, and we have thousands of projects, and you can press this button and it'll generate the code for the project. And then your job will be to assess the AI code and determine which of these 3 buckets it's in. Right.
Okay.
And so sometimes it works, sometimes it kind of works, and sometimes it totally doesn't work at all. And depending on what that is, you can learn about code by fixing bad code.
Yes.
You can also learn code by assessing code and say, hey, this code is really good.
Right.
You can learn code by looking at code and say, I asked for a blue cat and you gave me a red dog. I just have to throw it all out and start from the beginning, because whatever the AI created just really didn't work out at all. Yeah. So this is just the beginning, right? And there haven't been a lot of resources invested into how to teach code to kids using AI, or how to learn AI to do a better job learning how to code.
Right.
I'm working on that a little bit, but this is like a really interesting idea, because the skill is not so much to code, right? Not to write good JavaScript or good Python. The skill is to go build an app or help someone.
Yes.
Right.
You know, yes.
Like process data. And very often, especially in the last 10, 20 years in tech, you've had to write the code to be able to do that. But going forward, as AI can pick up more and more of the small and medium-sized pieces, you can actually do more and more of the creative work, right? Going back to my dice rolling example.
Yeah.
I can spend less time on making sure the dice roll and more time trying to figure out how many dice do I want to roll? How do I want to present it? Where do I want that information to go? Do I want to line it up horizontally or vertically? These are more like creative thoughts, right? Like layout is inherently creative. Just generating the data is less creative, right? So I think that that's where AI and coding can work together, is there's always room for the human brain to be creative and come up with something that's a little bit new or a little bit different. And AI can basically help you with the blocking and tackling of, like, listen, going back to our dinner table example here, right? Like, if we have 8 plate settings and we have to put the plate here and the fork and the knife and the spoon there and the cup and the saucer here,
right,
and it goes in the exact same place every time, right? And anybody who's listening to the show who's ever set the table at home knows this.
Yes.
Is you don't need a lot of creativity to set the table for dinner.
Right.
In fact, very often when you think about setting the table for dinner, your natural reaction is, oh, mom, do I really have to do that?
Right?
Yes.
Because it's a brain dead activity.
Yes.
Right. Because so AI can figuratively do that for you. It's the repetitive task that you could basically say the rule is set the plate in front of the chair, 8 inches in from the table, put the spoon here, put all the cutlery here, and basically, if it was digital, you could create a place setting table. And now you don't have to spend any time setting the table.
That's
so you can spend more time thinking about how am I going to arrange the food and how am I going to make this like a really happy place to eat, right? Like most people on a daily basis don't put out candles because it's a little bit too fancy, right? But like, and why would you want to put out the candles after you've had to lay out the dinner table? But if you arrived at 5:01 p.m., let's say you start to set the dinner table at 5 p.m., and the table's already set, now you can think about, maybe I want candles or napkins or a special something else on the table to spruce it up, right?
Exactly.
And most of the time,
day
to day when we have dinner with our family, we're not sprucing things up. We're just eating dinner. But if dinner was already like laid out for us, we could actually spend that time, and mom could say, not, hey, can you set the table? Mom was like, hey, can you come up with one cool thing to put on the table that's going to make our dinner more enjoyable? And the 2 minutes that you would have spent to set the table, you can now spend 1 minute adding a flourish, adding a set of flowers or a colorful picture or something to like make the dinner table better. And that's what AI can do for coding, is instead of having to worry about the semicolons and the brackets and the blocking and tackling of the stuff that you have to do over and over and over in code, you can spend your time adding flourishes and making it nicer and organizing it better and doing better layout. And now your code will be like just better, and you'll get more wow moments from your audience once the code is built.
That makes so much sense.
Yeah.
So that is basically like, I think, how coding and AI will work together.
You are founder and CEO of Hatch Coding. So you are teaching people from the very beginning how to code. How have you started to integrate AI into how you're teaching people to learn to code?
We started our software company about 10 years ago. We've had about 60,000 kids and a bunch of them have like you know, started at 12, and I think we have two people who have raised money and have started their own company who are now in their early 20s, which is really cool. We have lots and lots of people who are working at Amazon and Google, Walmart. And we have this kind of zero to engineer track. And then we're adding this AI engineer track to it as well, where you can, it's hundreds of hours of coding. Basically, mathematics is a well-trodden path, right? We know how to get from 1 + 1 to calculus.
Yes.
Hatch coding does that for code. You start with your very first day of code, two lines of code, right? Multiple choice to like fill it in.
Right.
All the way to when you're writing hundreds of lines of code in multiple languages. And you can walk into a job interview for an engineering job and get a job. That's kind of what hatch coding does. And the way we're integrating AI is we're starting to, as people are going through this long journey, they're able to press a button, get some AI output, and then we actually train them on how to triage and assess that AI output.
Before we end with our challenge, can you tell everybody where they can find out more information about Hatch Coding and how they can discover you guys?
Sure. So we're on Twitter, at Hatch Coding. My personal Twitter is at P_Cooperman. And you can go to hatchcoding.com. You can sign up for free. Our whole system is online for free. And then if you want help going through the system faster, you can sign up for one-to-one coaching. You could literally go from your very first line of code all the way from 1 + 1 to calculus in code, all the way from your very first day of code to when you can walk into a job interview on your own for free. And then if you want us to help us speed that process along, then there's, you know, buttons you can click to get mentorship.
And is this just for kids or can adults do it too? Or
so the whole system has been set up for kids, right? It's,
okay.
You have to make design choices when you're building an app. And the design choices we made was basically starting at age 8 and going to about age 16. The content is good enough to help an adult get there. And this new AI piece we're building is more teens and young adults focused.
Right.
Adults can use it to learn. Absolutely. We've had a couple adults actually go down that path. So Hatch Coding, sign up for free. And just you can contact us. And if you say that you found us in Solve It for Kids, we'll give you a 10% discount. Happy to do that.
That's fantastic.
That's very cool.
Thank you. Yeah. We could talk to you forever, Peter. I have learned, honestly, so much, probably more than I've ever
known
about coding. So now, but we are at that time in the show where we ask all of our guests to give our listeners a challenge. I'm curious to know what your challenge will be, Peter.
Sure. So my challenge is we're going to have you use ChatGPT to help you start to code. And what we're going to do is, first of all, come up with something in your life that you want to make better. It could be personal. It could be professional. So I had someone who is very, very high up at Shopify, and she just loved avocados. So she wanted to build an avocado nutrition app because that is what really mattered to her.
Right? Okay.
So come up with something. And then go to ChatGPT and say, what are three titles for an app that does this something? Pick one of those titles. And then ask ChatGPT, for an app with this name, what are the 5 items on the main menu that you would see on that app?
Huh.
And now ChatGPT will give you these 5 things. And then,
no kidding.
And then the last part of the challenge is you say, for each of those 5 things, tell me what steps would have to be in the code for that part of the app to run properly.
Okay.
And so you're going to basically, the challenge overall is get ChatGPT to write you an outline of what an app would look like. It's those 3 questions. What's my app's name? What are the 5 main menu items? And for each main menu item, what are 5 pieces? What are 5 features that need to be built? You can literally say, oh, this is an app to do like dog walking, data tracking. Or school book purchasing or real estate drone picture taking of houses, right? Like it can be anything you want. And you'll get these 25 items from ChatGPT and it'll really open your mind up in terms of how you could use AI to help you organize the next project that you're building.
That's fantastic. Oh my gosh.
I like this challenge. This is a
great challenge. Yeah. I hope everybody does this. Well, this again has been an amazingly informative podcast.
Yes.
I have learned tons. Thank you so much for being on Solve It for Kids, Peter.
Thank you, Peter.
You are welcome. And thank you for having me on the show.
Whether you like diving into the behind the scenes of computers or not with the coding, I know that word scares a lot of people, but this episode really brings it right out front that I think it is touching more things that we are all using on our computers than we are thinking about. So it's going to change the way we use our computers and, of course, our cell phones and devices. This was super fun. What did you think, Jen?
Yeah, I did. I thought it was great. I think artificial intelligence is so controversial, right? Especially for kind of what I do in my world as publishing. We're all very leery and not thrilled with it, but it has a lot of advantages as well. And for me, I'm not a coder. So I'm like, if I can learn how to code more easily, I mean, I'm kind of in for that, right? Like there's a lot of advantage to AI. And I think using his challenge with ChatGPT, I mean, again, that makes me a little nervous, but I'm also very curious, right?
You hit it right on the nose right there. Curiosity is what we talk about here in all different areas and realms. And when we jump into this one, using his challenge, great challenge, Peter, use ChatGPT to learn to code, figure out a new app, what would be the name of your new app, then come up with 5 menu items, what are the steps in code for that app to work. I love how he took it deeper so that you really get into it, not just, okay, what would be the name? Oh, newapp.com, and that's it, and then we're done. A challenge should be a little bit challenging, and Peter did just that for us.
Yeah, exactly. So if any of you guys do this, because I'm in my spare time, I'm going to try and do this, I think. But if any of you do this, we'd love to know, so share it with us. You can find us on our social. We are at KidsSolve at Facebook, X, and Instagram. And don't forget to check out our website, solveitforkids.com, where we will have all of the instructions that Peter gave for his challenge. And also, you'll be able to learn all about hatch coding from our website. So be sure to check it out.
Oh, sorry, listeners. I was just thinking about what my new app is going to be about. Until next time, you'll hear Jen and Jeff on
Solve It for Kids.